Welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. For thousands of years, the sages have known that compassion is a powerful force for good. In the last two decades, compassion scholars caught up with these sages, proving that there is an ROI to building loving communities and businesses. This podcast features leaders who can teach us about the power of compassion. Tracy Rosensteel, welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy to be with you today.
Thank you for having me, Laurel. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, as I was preparing for today, I remember being introduced to you by my friend Paul Lanzarotti.
I remember.
And he told me, this was many years ago, he said, "I just met, I think, the most fascinating person I've ever met."
Too kind.
And I felt that then many years ago, but I really have been following you and your journey and your family's journey. And I think he was psychic, because things continue to be really interesting and exciting for you. So we're going to talk about you and your life and your work today. And let's just start with what happened a few weeks ago, because that was pretty exciting. The reason we got reunited is your brother, Sean, posted on LinkedIn that you were going to be on Shark Tank. So tell us the story of why you were on Shark Tank.
Okay, thank you for asking. So yes, very exciting. A couple of weeks ago, as you mentioned, we ended up being a part of episode 2 of season 12 on Shark Tank. I decided to go on Shark Tank because I wanted to, first of all, seek an investment at this stage of the business, and that business is Pooch Paper. And Pooch Paper is a paper alternative to single-use plastic dog waste bags.
Well, I got to see the episode, but tell us more about your product and what happened.
Yeah, no problem. So a few years ago, I have a 9-year-old French bulldog. And a couple of years ago, I really got tired of using plastic bags to pick up dog waste. I live in Manhattan, and on every single street corner at the end of every day, each garbage bin is filled with all of this plastic. And as you know, our country is going through a bunch of legislation increasing every day around single-use plastics at the checkout. But nobody has yet figured out how to get around the plastic bags that are used for dogs. And particularly this year, huge rise in dog ownership because of COVID. And that's wonderful for the shelters that most dogs have found a forever home, which makes me very happy. Anyway, so I kicked off about 3 or 4 years of research and development to figure out, and testing and trial and failure after failure, but finally success. And I found a paper product. Everything's manufactured in the US, and was able to bring this to market earlier this year. So I tested it out in a global pet expo actually last year, kind of dipped the toe in the water after I put all the patent paperwork together, just to see if there was a market and an interest in this sort of thing. And to my delight, there was a huge interest in this sort of thing. So I technically really brought it to market, as I mentioned, early 2020. We've launched with a couple of retail partners such as Target, Chewy, Orvis, and a handful of others. In total, maybe somewhere around 1,500 locations around the country already. In our process of doing that, of course, earlier this year, we all know that COVID hit, and it obviously threw a bit of a wrench in the works, as it were. So I considered, and of course, all my friends have told me, this is the perfect product. You really need to bring it to Shark Tank. So I reached out in probably February and received some interest on their end, which was great. So I was invited to work through the process of filling out paperwork, of course, and really pitching the product, creating a video that I think subsequently mine, and as I understand, about 44,000 other people throw their hat in the ring for this each year. So all of that content and information was, of course, reviewed by their teams. And lo and behold, I was invited in, I believe it was April or early May, to continue with the process, which was great. that turned into multiple conversations per week with the producers. There were two assigned to me, and they were lovely, lovely people to work with. And that came to fruition in August, we filmed. And then I was lucky enough to be a part of the very beginning of their season 12.
That's amazing. There's 44,000 applicants for each season. That's quite something, quite a hoop you got through there. So you got a deal. So tell us about that. What happened on the show?
Okay, so the one thing people I don't think realize is the pitch itself is, well, it can go anywhere from 45 minutes and up. So I believe I was in the tank for about an hour and a half. And then, of course, that gets edited down to maybe 4 minutes that airs on television. So the pitch itself was actually quite a bit of fun, very stressful, as you could probably imagine. I remember standing behind the second door waiting for the countdown from 7 to walk through the hallway into the tank, and just, I think I could see my heart beating out of my chest.
I'm really relieved that it's an hour and that you actually spent an hour and a half, because I watch it religiously and I sit there and I was like, how do they figure out how to make a decision so quickly? So I'm so happy to know that it wasn't like 5 minutes. It's actually an hour and a half of discussion and
due diligence. Yeah, exactly. And all that, there's a lot of due diligence that's done. Of course, it goes to the Shark Tank, you know, team versus all the individual sharks, but there's quite a bit in the vetting process of what goes from 44,000 people who enter or, you know, submit to, I think it's about 120 maybe per season that actually make it to air. So yeah, so it was exciting to, you know, stand in front of the five of them and be able to pitch and have that much time, an hour and a half with them in the room. And, you know, it's funny, they always tell you that you have one chance to do your top, you know, the top pitch, which is roughly 90 seconds. And you can't go back. You know, we're not editing. If you screw up, you screw up. And we're airing that. Well, I was just about finished. And when I did the demonstration of take, twist, toss, which is how you use the paper to pick up waste. And when I twisted it, the paper, because of its grease resistance coating, it stays in place. And it's hard to get that until you see it. So I tossed it then after into the bin. And I on purpose took it, you know, I had ordered a bin that you could see through. And the minute I threw it in the bin, Kevin completely interrupted my conversation or my pitch. And he said, whoa, wait a minute. How is that paper? Is that sticky paper? How is that holding together? And then Lori spoke up and said, Kevin, she's not finished with her pitch yet. And she looked at me. She said, are you finished? I said, no, I'm not finished. But I answered his question. And then I looked over at the producers. I said, should I take a beat and go back and finish so you can edit this in? Yes, please. So I did. And then I finished my one pup at a time. And then I looked at everybody. I said, okay, I'm done. So that just, it was kind of funny up at, yeah, you know, the top of the pitch. So it made me a lot more relaxed. It ended up being a really nice hour and a half.
You, well, and what I saw of it, you looked great. And
thank you.
Tell us who got you. What shark did you get to work with?
With Kevin O'Leary. So he was the only shark that offered a deal. He gave me two options. One was to own 50% of the equity, which I'm sure he was pushing towards. And I know that he prefers a licensing, or excuse me, a
Royalty.
Thank you. Yeah, a royalty deal.
He's Mr. Royalty.
I know. So I think I have a feeling he went to 50% knowing I'd laugh at that, which I did. That didn't make it. He said 50%. I said, or. So, yeah. So he offered the investment at 250 in exchange for $1 a box. And what I had done in preparation for going to Shark Tank, I was actually really hoping to have a deal with Kevin. And I was also really hoping to protect my equity and find a type of a royalty deal. So before I even arrived, I figured out with my suppliers and, you know, basically the whole supply chain, how to shore up savings of up to a dollar per box so that I could make a deal like that and have it not necessarily touch my bottom line. So I was very happy with that offer. Yeah.
That's fantastic. I noticed Kevin gave you a nickname during
He did. He called me Wall Street Tracy. I think it took 2 minutes of my telling him my background on Wall Street. And he's like, right. We have that in common. Let's go for it. So,
yeah, I think other sharks referred to it too, but it is definitely something that, you know, I saw the show a couple of months ago and I still remembered. And I think other people have noticed that stuck with as well. So what happened? Did that happen today or you're in New York?
It was yesterday, actually. Yeah, it was funny. I was walking my dog, in Manhattan, a couple blocks from my home, and somebody completely random passed me by on the sidewalk and said, "Hey, Wall Street Tracy, how's it going?" So that's obviously a nice feel-good moment of, all right. And what was funny is in my mind, just a few minutes before she passed me, I was saying in my mind, I'm like, gosh, I'm having a hard day. It would really be nice to have a sign of some kind. And then she passed. I thought, wow, there it is.
Fantastic. Well, as entrepreneurs, there are days where we wonder if what we're doing is the right thing.
And, no question.
I'm so glad you got that sign. And I'm so glad that things are going well with Pooch Papers and that you are going to help save the planet one pup at a time. Mm-hmm. Really excited about that. So what's next for your company?
So we're very excited to be expanding our SKUs, so our line at the moment. So our current sheet of Pooch Paper is a 12-inch by 12-inch sheet. So it's in a 6x6 box because we sell it retail folded, right, in quantities of 50. So that's for a, you know, small to medium-sized dog. So we've had a lot of interest in a larger paper. So we are expanding the SKU. It should, by the end of the year, so a couple weeks from now, we should have a 7x7 box. So in other words, 14x14 sheet paper. We're also starting to kick off actually around the country, which is exciting, with municipalities for replacement of plastic in dog parks and walking trails. Also multi-tenant buildings. So that's started to kick off. We work with an organization actually out of Asheville, North Carolina, who does a lot of composting. They were nice enough to do a side-by-side comparison throughout a course of a week of composting Pooch Paper against, I guess you could say, one of our top competitors, which is a plant-based plastic. And it turned out that we were about 7 times quicker and cleaner by way of composting by the end of the week, which was exciting to see. We've obviously tested that previously, but it's nice to see how exactly we stack up to the competition. So that's, you know, been kind of a cool thing to learn. And then we also have, a new, this has now been out for a couple of weeks, but we needed to come up with our own branded pooch pouch, which can clip to your leash or your belt buckle or your stroller, your wrist, whatever it is. So that's exciting. So we made it so that it would accommodate the larger or smaller sheet of paper. And that is, now I can say that everything we have is manufactured in the USA, which is exciting. And then we have some other things coming down the line. Some people have asked for a clip. So if they're on a long walk, for example, they don't want to hold a Pooch Paper for too long of a time, they can clip a used one, off of their leash. So that's branded up and ready to go. I actually saw the prototype for that about 2 days ago. So that's exciting. And we'll continue to grow, you know, online sales. We sell, you know, through our own website and, of course, our web partners and our retail partners as well.
So what does your team look like? You're the main person, I take it, but do you have your own team or do you work with freelance people, vendors? How does that work?
Yep. So a good question. At the moment, everybody's freelance. I have a head of sales for North America. He's located in Nashville. What's been tremendous is he joined probably about 4 or 5 months ago. So while I've been knee deep in getting the Shark Tank stuff prepared and running the business and expanding the SKUs and planning for that and moving our e-commerce onto our own platform and all kinds of other things that needed to take place infrastructure wise, he was able to pick up the ball with respect to sales and run with it, which has been tremendously helpful. And he's put us in a really great position for 2021. So his name's Bill. So we have Bill. And then I have two people working with me on a website and integrated digital marketing campaigns and social media posts and things of that nature with Instagram and Facebook. So those are two folks that I have working with me there. And then my infrastructure for just the product itself. So I have, of course, my paper source and then my fulfillment agency. All the paper, once it's converted to pooch paper, is shipped just 2 hours north of here in the city of New York. And everything gets folded through the folding machines, packed, and all the pick, pack, and ship is done from the fulfillment center up in Newburgh, New York.
Wonderful. I'm so excited for you. So excited for you and so excited for the planet.
Thanks.
Really, really wonderful. So I was thinking about this transition. So we go from pooch paper. You like peas, Tracy. So you also have a PBS show that is called In Pursuit of Passion. So
many more peas there.
when we first met, that's what we were working on. So let's go back there and talk about that venture and how that came about and what's going on with that now.
Sure. Okay. Thank you for asking. So I've always been artsy. I actually have published a few children's books and plays, and I illustrate those as well. And I paint and I take, shoot photography. And I had gotten to a place in my life where I wasn't doing a whole lot of travel because I was working too much. And unlike when I was younger and I was lucky enough to travel overseas for school, I was now having to pay for it. So it was not happening as often or as frequently. So I really wanted to do a travel show. I really wanted to get back into having very intimate local experiences with people who were from all over the globe, every walk of life, et cetera. And I'll never forget, I was living in Chicago at the time, and I was rollerblading along Lake Michigan with my dad. And I said, "Dad, listen, this is the venture I'd like to do next. And what do you think? I have no idea what I'm doing. And I don't want to just create a travel television show that's like every other one out there. Here we are in New York in a teeny tiny apartment, and there's a dog on the couch. Who knows what's for dinner? This kind of thing." So quite nice of my dad. He said, "Well, why don't, Tracy, you do a travel show, but have the concept be centered around what you do?" I said, "Well, what the heck does that mean? I'm not doing anything exciting." He said, "No, you come up with all these different ideas and you live your life in pursuit of your dreams. So why not find people around the globe who are like-minded, who, kind of like a Rocky Balboa story where you have a dream or a vision, talent, gift. It needs to be realized. It gets you out of bed in the morning. It keeps you up at night. It gets you going, and you will not quit against any adversity, odd, you name it, challenge. You do it anyway." And I thought, "Oh, wow, that's really inspirational and a great project. And yeah, I would love that." And as it turns out, I did end up completing that. I'll give you the detail in a moment, but I have to say, in all of the places that I traveled to produce season one, which is available now, I had such a joy meeting and working with all the people who were the subjects of each of these episodes, whether it was Africa, Greece, Switzerland, Italy. I mean, we really went all over the place because the subject of the show was, of course, about them and, more importantly, their passion, and a platform for these individuals to be able to share with the rest of the world how anything's possible with determination, perseverance, and drive, and you just believe in yourself, anything's possible. And I don't know who it was that said this, but I'll echo it. He who says he can and he who says he can't are both right. And I live by that. It's totally true. Attitude is 99% of anything in life. And it's my opinion, anyone who wants something bad enough will get it if they want it bad enough. So it was really exciting to be able to work on a whole series with completely different stories, completely different, people, cultures, ways of life, all the rest of it. But the common denominator with every one of those folks and every one of us, in my opinion, is we are all born with some kind of passion, and we owe it to ourselves and everyone around us to see it through.
I think right now we need to be reminded of that too.
Oh my gosh, especially after this year, right?
Yeah, I think we've all been shaken to our core, and it's a good time to revisit passions and purpose. It's always a good time, but I think our way out is through imagination, through passions and purpose. So can you tell us one story of one of your subjects from season one?
Oh, sure. Every single one's my favorite. And I always get asked that.
I didn't ask you for your favorite because I know they are, but just so we could get a flavor of one story.
Okay. Well, I'll share this one because as we're discussing entrepreneurship, it probably fits, the best. I had the luxury of being able to spend about 10 days with Jeffrey Kent of Abercrombie & Kent in Africa. And he founded Abercrombie & Kent, which is the high-end luxury travel outfitter. And they started in Kenya, I believe, and now they're global. And I think he was in Rome doing a personal tour with, I think it was Al Pacino, and he left early to come meet me in Africa. Which I thought, you really know I'm not anybody. Tell Al, I said, sorry. So anyway, that experience was really quite unbelievable. So he ended up wanting to do a safari company. He had, not two pennies to rub together, but he was really smart about it. And what he did was he would sit outside the Muthaiga Country Club, which had the Rockefellers and those types of people who frequented that place. And he'd wait outside, when he was younger, back when you had maybe one truck and a tent and that was a safari and you left for 30 days at a crack. And he made friends and offered, safari opportunities for the likes of Rockefeller. David Rockefeller was one of his first clients, I believe, and definitely one of his favorite, I would imagine. But and slowly he continued to grow the business, expand the business, but he knew where to fish where the fish are. So I'm a fly fisherman since I was maybe 12 years old. And I remember a guide one time telling myself and my brothers and my dad, look, it doesn't matter how beautiful your cast is, the presentation, the fly, the right time of day, water, season, fish, whatever. The bottom line is if you're casting into a place and there are no fish, you'll never catch one. So make sure you fish where the fish are. So that I never forgot that. And I think that Jeffrey Kent was a perfect example of fishing where, he put himself in the right place at the right time, had the right offer, and away he went. And I really look up to him for everything that he's accomplished.
That's great. That's really marketing, isn't it? Go fish where the fish are.
Yeah. It's like sales 101, really.
It's good. So what's next for In Pursuit of Passion? Where can we watch it?
Oh, thanks for asking. So we aired nationwide on PBS in about 50 million households each week for 4 years running, and rated the top of the category on the Nielsen's, which was amazing, and garnered 3 Telly Awards. And earlier this year, and it was perfect timing for COVID, people staying at home, we were picked up by Amazon. So you can watch, it's called In Pursuit of Passion, and you can watch it on Amazon Prime.
And you can travel around the world with Tracy, which is exciting. We need, I'm watching a lot of period dramas and dramas in Europe, so I can feel like I'm traveling from my couch. So
isn't that nice? I know.
So you can go on adventures and travel with Tracy from Amazon Prime, and you can look for In Pursuit of Passion. We haven't really touched on, we've talked about you as an entrepreneur and you as a creator, and I didn't know you wrote children's books. That's just another fascinating thing. And you're a fly fisherwoman. But where does the Wall Street Tracy come in? Tell us that story.
It couldn't be more different than everything we've talked about, right? So as each one of us experiences throughout life, you always need a day job, right? So rent needs to be paid and lights need to be kept on. So when I was very young and right out of college, my older brother had worked for a company that sold mission critical trading floor technology. And this is back in open outcry, Wolf of Wall Street type days. I was in Chicago at the time, and I ended up getting a job with that company and worked in the operations department. So I was able to support all of that technology on the Board of Trade, Board Options, and the Mercantile Exchange. So talk about an unbelievable place to get your teeth cut as far as high stress, high pressure, high, you know, intense people back in Wild West arena. But I had such a fun time and learned a ton about business and, you know, who to trust, who not to trust, these kinds of things, and just navigating that. So I had the experience for probably 4 or 5 years there, worked my way around operations. I used to hold training courses to train traders on how to affect their jobs on our new technology, that kind of thing. And then I was hired by the competition and I went into the sales arena, and that was maybe another 5-10 years, all the while working on all my part-time side hustles, which included children's books, that included In Pursuit of Passion. And actually at the time I knew I wanted to decide to go forward with In Pursuit of Passion. I needed funding, but I also knew I wanted to travel the globe, and how am I going to be an employee, etc. So this is an interesting story, actually. So I thought, right, I am confident I want to do the TV show. I actually took a trip and did kind of a dry run on a vacation of this is what it might look like, even though I have no idea what I'm doing, and do I like it? So I thought that was a good idea to kind of test the water. So I came home and I thought, yep, definitely. I definitely need to do this, but I need cash. Where do I get it? So I went out for a lunch break. I called one of my former employers and I said, hey, you know, it's Tracy. Oh, what are you doing now? I said, here's the deal. I have a consulting firm and we specialize in the implementation and rollout of your trading floor technology. So Ken, you know that you got, that's where you fall down. You do a great job selling your product to all the major global banks, exchanges, et cetera. And then you go through an implementation period, which is the very first moment your client has an experience with your brand and it stinks. And then it goes from there, once it's live, it kicks off the maintenance contract, which is really where you make your money. The middle part is a cost center for you and you're not good at it. So here's the deal. I have a company that does all of that for you. I have a bunch of people who know what they're doing, and let me handle your high-end global white glove service requiring clients. And you'll have I'll wear your hat. I'll look like I'm you, you know? So he said, absolutely great. The answer is yes. Let's get the ball rolling. I hung up the phone. I ran down to City Hall and I opened a company.
I love that story. I love that story for so many reasons. You know, I work with people who are transitioning, and, you know, one of their biggest fears is I have a passion, but how do I creatively make money while I'm doing it? So that's just a great example of using your creativity and using what was already in your wheelhouse. And yeah. I think entrepreneurs that make it are also good at explaining a vision as if it's real before it is real. So that's a fantastic story, Tracy. I love it. And that weaves Tracy's, you know, entrepreneurship and creativity back into her new nickname given to her by Kevin O'Leary, Wall Street Tracy. So Tracy, tell us how we can get your product, your Pooch Papers.
Okay. So our Pooch Paper sells online at poochpaper.com. We also sell online at chewy.com. We're in about 1,061 stores of Target nationwide, along with target.com. We also, in our very first big fish that we landed, for lack of a better term, is Orvis. They're a fly fishing outfitter. So near and dear to my heart that they were the first people, given the nature of my background, that decided to pick up Pooch Paper. No pun intended.
Love it.
So we're in about 70 stores nationwide where they sell dog product in addition to Orvis.com. And then we're in a handful of other boutiques, like small and medium size onesie, twosie, or sometimes, you know, a couple store locations in and around the country.
It's been an honor spending time with you and catching up with you on all your ventures. I'm very excited to be reunited, and I'm excited that my listeners can hear your stories, all your stories, and how you've woven together this beautiful life. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Laurel. So nice to reconnect.
Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. Please join us each week as we shine a light on compassionate leaders making a positive impact on their communities and the world.